Jai Gurudev. It is a great joy to welcome to speak to us at this third event in our 2011 Distinguished Lecture Series, Raja John Kanhaus and Dr. Sarah Kanhaus and Acharya Gopal Krishna Daveji. Let's give them a warm welcome. Raja Kanhaus worked with Maharshi personally for 40 years on all aspects of Vedic knowledge with special emphasis on Vedic agriculture, Ved in the Vedic literature, and Vedic administration. And both Raja John and Dr. Sarah Kanhaus have read all the Vedic literature in Sanskrit and English, and Sarah was the first person in the world to do that. Both hold PhDs in Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture and Vedic Administration, and master's degrees in Maharshi Vedic Science from Maharshi University of Management. Raja Kanhaus developed the Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture curriculum with Maharshi and the Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture Vedic procedures of farming with Maharshi and the Maharshi Vedic pundits. He graduated from the first Raja training program to become the Raja of Invincible Japan, Hungary, Egypt, Jamaica, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Chad, and Somalia. And Raja John and Sarah travel and live in these countries throughout the year. He has now spent 3 months here in Maharshi Vedic City to begin the world's first research application of the Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture procedures in the greenhouse here, meaning that the Maharshi Vedic pundits are now reciting the appropriate recitations to enliven the inner intelligence of the plants, some of which we eat in our own dining hall. So that is wonderful development. Dr. Sarah Kanhaus is the mother of the domain for the Raja of Japan and for these other countries I mentioned. Also, as I mentioned, PhD in Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture and Supreme Political Science. And Acharya Gopal Krishna Daveji worked directly with Maharshi and Maharaja Adiraj Raja Ram for 28 years on the Ved and Vedic literature and training programs for the Maharshi Vedic pundits. He holds a PhD in Maharshi Vedic science. He also worked with Maharshi in developing Maharshi Mahesh Yogi Vedic University in Madhya Pradesh in India, where he holds the position of registrar. And he is an expert in the application of Vedic recitations in enlivening plants' inner intelligence. So this is going to be a wonderful evening of knowledge, and let's thank them for coming and speaking to us. Jai Gurudev.
Guru Sakshat Param Brahma Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. It's a very great joy for us and a very great honor, actually, to be able to present this knowledge in this community. I remember Maharshi saying during the Invincible America Assembly, he said, I waited 50 years to find an audience like this. He said, these people are the people who have the consciousness and the knowledge that I can really bring out my highest knowledge. So it really is a fertile field here in Fairfield to bring out any of Maharshi's knowledge. And so when we wanted to bring out this new wave of Maharshi's knowledge, the knowledge of Vedic agriculture, and this is a science like the consciousness-based education, like Maharshi Ayurveda, like Maharshi Stapatya Veda, Maharshi considered the science of creating Vedic food to be absolutely essential for our growth of consciousness. The knowledge comes directly from Maharshi. He spent many, many years focusing on agriculture because he felt that the knowledge of proper food was going to be essential to develop that quality of the physiology which can experience and maintain higher states of consciousness. And I was quite surprised when Maharshi spoke of the knowledge of agriculture as Brahmvidya. And Brahmvidya means the knowledge of the full range of life, not just a localized discipline like planting seeds. I mean, Maharshi didn't think of agriculture just as planting seeds and growing crops. He thought of it as a total... Is the mic not good? Okay. Is that better? Okay, good. He thought of agriculture as a total knowledge of life, you know, that covered the whole range of life. And the program we're going to present to you tonight, these Vedic agriculture procedures, are really Maharshi's unique cognition. He called Sarah and I one day after the Dhanvantri Puja and said, I've actually seen now how we can enliven total natural law in agriculture. And this is the way we can do it. It was really something new in the field of Vedic science, actually. And so it's quite an exciting and new field. And of course, we want to acknowledge the tradition. Maharshi is the founder of Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture, but it comes from that long tradition. And that's what gives it its authenticity and its strength. You know, Vedic agriculture is really spiritual agriculture. Maharshi allowed us to call it that one time. He doesn't usually use terms like that, but he said really we can distinguish it from regular agriculture, that regular agriculture is concerned with more the physical values of the food, whereas Vedic agriculture is concerned with the deeper values of natural law, the kind of spiritual basis of life. And we want to infuse those qualities into the food so that that food will have that effect on us. So the topic tonight is Vedic food for Vedic consciousness. Vedic agriculture begins with organic agriculture. That's why we call it Maharshi Vedic Organic Agriculture. It is organic agriculture, and organic standards provide the basis for creating a level of pure food, basically on the physical level. But when we add the word Vedic to it, and that means basically, you all know what Vedic means. Vedic means in accord with natural law, or employing the intelligence of nature in our activity. So Vedic food is food which imbibes the total value of natural law. And Vedic consciousness is simply what we know from our practice as higher states of consciousness, unity consciousness, which everyone's focus here is in developing. And it's interesting that in our practice of the TM and TM City program, we use our mind, we use our consciousness to refine the physiology. We dive deep within and that affects our physiology. In Vedic agriculture, we approach it from the other side. We attempt to refine the physiology through food so that it can support higher states of consciousness. And Maharshi said a beautiful thing which sort of summarizes a lot of what Vedic agriculture is about. He said, if we can balance natural law, if we can enliven the complete value of natural law in the food, it'll enliven it in the physiology. And when the physiology is balanced, it will spontaneously give rise to higher states of consciousness. So here we're balancing the physical value, we're balancing the physiology through balanced food. And that will spontaneously give rise to higher states of consciousness. I want to talk tonight about some definitions, some principles, and some relationships. Principles and relationships are what Vedic science is all about, Vedic agriculture is all about. In this case, the fundamental relationship that we'll be looking at is the relationship between man and nature. what is the link? It should be a pretty close link, because actually man is very much a part of nature. Man came from the same source as everything else did. Man tends to forget that he's part of nature, but Vedic agriculture reestablishes that link. And in that regard, in this connection between man and nature, we're going to talk about consciousness and natural law, the relationship between consciousness and natural law, between natural law and food, between food and physiology, and between physiology and consciousness. And so, as you can see, it's a cycle. If collective consciousness is coherent, it has a dramatic effect on how powerful, how applied natural law is. If natural law is properly enlivened, it's going to create a high quality of food. That food is going to create a high quality of human physiology. That's going to produce a very beautiful individual consciousness, and that's going to lead to a higher quality of collective consciousness. This is a mutually reinforcing cycle that goes on throughout the practice of Vedic agriculture. And in terms of principles, I'll focus on two main principles. One is this idea of unity and diversity and their relationship, and the other is sequential unfoldment. So here's our famous movement diagram of man's relationship to nature. We want to, in Vedic agriculture, like all aspects of Vedic science, enliven the link between the individual and the cosmos. We want to make the intelligence of nature, which is the intelligence that's running the whole cosmos, we want to make that intelligence lively in us. We want to do that connection. And to begin, let me tell you a very sweet story from the Puran. It's from the Srimad Bhagavatam. For those of you who are familiar with the Vedic literature, the Puran is one of the ancient Vedic texts which teaches the knowledge through story. The young children hear these stories from a very young age. They learn the story, and as they grow in maturity in their consciousness, the story starts to have more and more meaning. And so the Vedic literature really is the best quality expression of knowledge or of the wisdom of life. And the reason for that is that Vedic literature is an expression of consciousness. We say the Vedic literature is a direct perception of the mechanics of consciousness. And the Vedic literature is also written in the Sanskrit language, which is the language of nature. So in all ways, the Vedic literature is the best way to gain knowledge. So here's how the story goes. This is a picture of King Prithu, who was the father of Vedic agriculture. And he came to power, he was a young man, he came to power at a time when the society was very corrupt, very adharmic. There was a lot of sinfulness, wickedness, basically very incoherent collective consciousness. Like President Obama, he inherited a bag of worms, basically, when he came into power. So he was naturally quite concerned as a young king, because there was a great famine in the land and his people were starving. And so he decided to challenge Mother Earth. He said that Mother Earth is withholding the food, and therefore he was going to challenge Mother Earth. So he went to look for Mother Earth. And again, all of these concepts are symbolized in the Vedic literature. To give you the entire, you know, natural environment is symbolized as Mother Earth. And in this case, Mother Earth had taken the form of a cow, which she frequently does. And so King Prithu challenged her and said, "Why have you taken the food? My people are starving." And Mother Earth just started to run. So she tried to get away from King Prithu, and King Prithu pursued her all across the land. And finally, Mother Earth tired, and she stopped, and she said to King Prithu, "If you in any way harm me, you'll be harming the very basis of your people's lives. The people depend upon me. They have their life on me. They have their food on me." But she said, "I'll tell you why I've withdrawn the food." She said, "There's a saying in our tradition that it's a sin to feed the wicked." And so Mother Earth said, "Since there is such incoherence in society, I decided to withdraw all the food so that I would not be guilty of the sin of feeding the wicked." So she said to King Prithu, "If you can restore righteousness, if you can restore Dharma, then I'll bring back the food." So King Prithu said, "Okay, tell me what to do." And so Mother Earth said, "There's a practice that's described in the Yoga Sutras. There's three qualities of awareness, Dharana, Dhyan, Samadhi, which basically means, Samadhi means transcendental consciousness, Dhyan means meditation, and Dharana means fixity. Basically, Dharana, Dhyan, and Samadhi are the basis of our TM City program and our TM program. So she basically told King Prithu, "Bring the TM and TM City program to your people, and then we'll see what happens." And he did that. He brought it to all aspects of society. Immediately, the society became more coherent, and all of the crops came back to the earth. So this is a simple story, and I've been getting meaning from this story for many years since I first heard it. But it really encapsulates all of Vedic agriculture, because it brings out the relationship between coherence in collective consciousness and the expression of the laws of nature. It's funny, we think of the laws of nature as just fixed, that they must be the same at all times and in all places. And actually, physics makes a big point of that. That's what the definition of the laws of nature are. They're the same in all times and in all places. But Vedic science says that the laws of nature are the same, but how well they're able to express themselves changes based on the coherence in the collective consciousness. So this is really our first standard that we have in Vedic agriculture. And tonight I'll be talking a little bit about the standards of Maharshi Vedic organic agriculture. These are the standards by which we judge if a project meets the quality to be said to be Maharshi's knowledge. So the first requirement is sufficient collective consciousness in the environment. And of course, there's no place that meets that criteria better than Fairfield. So that's another reason why we decided to start here. But let's look at it from the physics perspective, which you're all very familiar with. This chart is like second nature here. But it really is a very fundamental chart in Vedic science because it shows the relationship between man. Can you see this pointer here? Yeah. Between man and his consciousness and nature and the expression of the laws of nature. From physics, we learn that the fundamental reverberations of the unified field, these fine vibrations, these string vibrations of the string, as Dr. Hagland describes them, they give rise to all the particles and forces in nature. So nature, as we know it around us, ourselves, the plants, the animals, everything, is made up of the fundamental reverberations of the unified field. Now, deep within our own consciousness, within our Vedic consciousness, we can experience those same reverberations simply because we know from Maharshi that the unified field of consciousness is the unified field of natural law, They're not different fields. So if we have the perceptual ability to experience these fine reverberations of consciousness, we have a way to handle nature. And that's the secret of Vedic agriculture. We handle nature from its source in the unified field through our own consciousness and through the consciousness of the Vedic pundits. Here's a simple graphic that shows that an apple is made up of atoms which have protons and neurons and electrons. And we know now that quarks are subatomic particles which make up those neutrons and protons. And that the strings, the finest particle that physics has been able to conceptualize, these vibrating strings, if they vibrate this way, it's a proton. If they vibrate this way, it's an electron. But it's the same fundamental thing. It's like taking a piece of gold. You can make a necklace, you can make a ring, you can make some earrings, you can make anything you want from the same basic substance. Here's a little video clip that I have taken.
Inside every grain of sand,
to show the same thing,
are billions of tiny atoms.
Every atom is made of smaller bits of matter, electrons orbiting a nucleus made of protons and neutrons, which are made of even smaller bits of matter called quarks. But string theory says this is not the end of the line. It makes the astounding claim that the particles making up everything in the universe are made of even smaller ingredients, tiny, wiggling strands of energy that look like strings. Each of these strings is unimaginably small. In fact, if an atom were enlarged to the size of the solar system, a string would only be as large as a tree.
So that's graphically, that's Vedic agriculture graphically. We want to deal with the strings, basically, so we can deal with the plants. Let's look at a couple principles. We'll start with this principle of unity and diversity. It's very important that we enliven unity at the basis of diversity, and that's our program here, and that we can see diversity in unity, and that these two become integrated. Now, this particular shape you've all seen also, it's called, Marshi called it the Dumru, because it looks like an Indian drum. This, as you can see, is the same principle that we know from the unified field chart. This idea of convergence of diversity to a point of unity. This is the basis of the unified field chart. And this is the basis of our meditation, converging the mind from active mind to silent mind. So this value of diversity converging to unity and then re-emerging in diversity again. This is a very important principle in Vedic science and in Vedic agriculture. The thing is, when diversity comes to the field of unity and then reemerges in the field of diversity, it's a changed value of diversity. That's how we make the change. You'll see in the field of agriculture, we want the field of agriculture to agree with the culturing intelligence of natural law. Marshi always loved to say, agriculture is agreeing with the culturing intelligence of total natural law. That means that when we say agree, we mean become in tune with total natural law. And when Vedic agriculture is able to come in tune with the intelligence of nature, then it's a changed value of agriculture. And here's what happens. The tree matures and produces a seed. In doing that, it converges all of the diversity of the tree down into the unity of a seed. You can hold a tree in the palm of your hand in a seed. All the intelligence of the tree is contained in the seed. And then that intelligence re-expresses itself as a tree. And as that happens over time, we can see tree to seed to tree to seed to tree to seed. This is the process of evolution. This is how evolution occurs. This is how the species grows and evolves, by continually coming back to its silent source, its genetic core in the seed, and then re-emerging as a tree. So this principle of unity, or diversity converging to unity and coming back to diversity, is one of our fundamental principles. Now, the second very important principle, and the principle that's going to be the key to enlivening total natural law in the food, is this principle that nature is divided into eight qualities in the expressed value of nature, and twofold undivided qualities in the unexpressed value. It comes from this shloka from the Bhagavad Gita, Bhumir apo nalo vayu kam mano buddhir evacha ahankara itiyam me vinna prakritir ashtada. It's Lord Krishna speaking, and he's saying, earth, water, fire, air, ether, or akasha, mind, intellect, and ego. This is my prakriti, my nature, my eightfold divided nature. And we're going to talk about a lot about these qualities. People sometimes say to me, well, that was the way they talked about the world in the Middle Ages, you know, the five qualities, earth, water, fire, air, and akasha. But Vedic agriculture defines these qualities in a very special way, and you'll see. This chart shows the origin of these prakritis in the field of consciousness. And again, this is a very specialized Vedic knowledge that really is a very advanced level of knowledge. Maharshi only brought out this knowledge very late, you know, in his career of teaching, only when our experiences got to a certain level. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this, but basically Maharshi said that consciousness itself, the field of transcendental consciousness, our own simplest form of awareness, if we could see it and perceive it carefully, would have eight fundamental qualities or reverberations. We might think of it as eight reverberations of that string, that super string we saw reverberating in the movie. Eight different modes of reverberation of the fundamental field. And these are the eight modes in which consciousness, in its most fundamental nature, reverberates. And they have the names of the Sanskrit vowels, A, I, U, R, R, A, O, and Um. These, Maharshi said, are the sounds or the reverberation of the eight qualities of consciousness. Now, if these are the impulses of pure knowledge, their organizing power, we know knowledge always has organizing power. So the organizing power of each of the eight swaras are the eight prakritis. Bhumi, or earth, ap, water, agni, fire, vayu, air, akash, space, mind, intellect, and ego. Now, at the basis of this eightfold divided nature is pure transcendental consciousness. We call it Purusha consciousness. And the lively value of pure consciousness is that infinite dynamism, which we call Mother Divine, or the quality of action in silence. So there's these two unmanifest and eight divided manifest qualities of consciousness. Now, the important thing is here is that that structure of natural law continues throughout creation. The entire unfoldment of creation is in this same eightfold structure. And this is the key to all of Vedic agriculture, because it allows us to handle all of the expressed values of life from its unexpressed source in these eight prakritis. Now, let's look at it. Its first expression is in the Rig Veda, in the first sukta. There's eight syllables of the first richa, and there's eight richas in the first sukta. And then there's eight divided mandalas, and two first mandala and tenth mandala are representing that undivided nature. So the mandalas of the Veda have that eightfold structure, same structure. Now we come to Vedic agriculture, and Maharshi said, now find the eightfold nature in a tree, in a plant. Now here's where we have to understand that bhumi, or the earth quality, does not mean a lump of earth. It is a principle, not a substance, but a principle. It's an organizing power. So bhumi stands for all of the structural elements in the plant, like the stem, the leaves, the cell walls. Anything that's structural is bhumi. Up, or water, is all the fluid systems in a plant. So the flow of the cytoplasm, or any kind of flow of fluids within the plants, is represented by this organizing principle of up. Agni represents the metabolism in a plant. The fire element represents all of the metabolic processes, like photosynthesis. Vayu, or air, represents the respiration in the plant. Manas represents the flowering stage. Buddhi, or intellect, the fruiting stage. And ahankara represents the new seed. So in a little more detail, let's see if I can read it better up here. The bhumi element stands for the foundation of the plant in the root and the earth. The up represents the main channel in the stem, the fluid. The agni is in the upper epidermal cells of the leaves where this photosynthesis and metabolism take place. The vayu is in the lower epidermal and stomata. This is where the respiration in the plant takes place. Akasha is the characteristic spread, how the plant spreads in space. And each plant has its own characteristic spread in space. And also the spaces within the plant. The next, mind, is represented by the awareness of the plant. Plants have awareness. Their awareness of the cycles of time, the cycles of the season, cycles of the moon. They're aware of their environment. And I'll show you some pictures of that in a minute. The intellect value is the value of the plant has to differentiate in the fruit the previous generation with the next generation, which is found in the seed. So people often ask me, you know, do plants really have mind, intellect, and ego? Aren't we attributing too much to plants? And I sort of like to respond, well, the plants always say, does man really have a mind and an intellect and an ego? Here he is, he dumps chemicals on the soil and destroys the life in the soil. Then he dumps poisons on us to try to compensate for the weakened plant because he destroyed the soil. And then he eats these plants with all the poison and he poisons himself. I mean, does man really think about it? So here's all of you who have studied biology and everything know that plants are very intelligent. Next thing is a small time-lapse photography of a bean plant looking for a support. And the bean plant grows in all four directions of the compass. It'll keep growing in all four directions until it finds what it's looking for, which is a support. The moment it finds it, it will decide to stop there and grab hold of it. This is the mind and the intellect of a plant in action here. This is very much speeded up. But this is the way the plant is actually growing in all these directions. And it's looking in all possible directions. Now it's found that. Now it's decided to stop and wind around that. Each successive branch, you know, starts looking until it finds what it's looking for. The next one shows a plant's awareness of its environment. This is a bean plant, and for about 12 hours a day, it spreads its leaves to receive the sunlight. But at nighttime, it relaxes and drops its leaves. It doesn't have to spread them at night, so it drops its leaf. And it does that very much in tune with the day and the night. And it's so aware that if you try to trick the plant and put it in an all-light or an all-dark environment, it'll still, every 12 hours, do its rest in its active cycle. So this is just one 12-hour cycle here. And now it's nighttime, so it goes to sleep. And then it wakes back up in the day. So plants are very aware, and they very much have an intelligence. But now Maharshi would always tell Sarah and I, see the eight, see the eight, see the eight. Keep on finding these eight divided nature of light. Because we thought we were done when we found them in the plant. And Maharshi said, well, what about mammals? So here's the cow, you know, with its structural systems, its metabolic systems, its, you know, circulatory systems, its, you know, different mind, intellect, and ego systems based on different, the brain and the hypothalamus, the thalamus, etc. So Maharshi said, well, what about birds? And we said, birds, you know, because Vedic science likes to think about birds too. So we had to find all of these different eight, you know, Bhumi or Apo, Nalo, Vayu, Akash, Manas. All of these qualities are there in the nervous system, in the physiology, in the organs, in the bones, in the cells. And why is this important? It's important because if the animals, if the plants, if we have these systems, if we balance the eight here in the plants, when we eat those plants, it's going to balance the eight here. Okay, here's our eightfold division. You know, the structural elements of the body, the circulatory system for the fluids, the digestive system, the respiratory system. Then we look at the articular system, the joints, the hypothalamus, the endocrine system, the reproductive system, the brain and the neurological system, and the thalamus and those systems. So we have these eightfold organizing principles in our body. And remember what Maharshi said at the beginning. If we balance the eight in the body spontaneously, the ninth and the tenth will emerge. That pure consciousness and that dynamic pure consciousness of enlightenment will emerge simply from the balance in the body. Here's just another view of that eightfold system in the body. And here is a summary chart. It shows, again, we see the eightfold structure in the swaras, in the prakritis, in the syllables of the first sukta, in the first pada, in the first richa, in the mandalas, in the organ systems of man, in the plants, and also now we'll see it in the life cycle of a plant. So this is the eightfold nature. Let's go back to relationships. Let's start to look at the relationship between natural law and food. Because then we're going to look at the relationship between food and physiology and consciousness. So one of our standards in Vedic agriculture is that we use the Vedic agriculture procedures, we call them. These are Vedic recitations which are applied during the life cycle of a plant. And I'm going to ask Dhavacharya a little later to explain exactly how the pundits are able to do this. But this is the eight stages in a life of a plant, which, you know, Maharshi liked this organization of these eight stages. He said we should find the eight stages of a plant's life. So it starts out in the silent seed, and this is represented by the earth element. Then the swollen seed, once the plant is watered, the seed starts to swell, and we have a swollen seed. That's the second quality, the up. Then Agni, the fire element, is when the plant comes through the soil and first experiences the sun. So it experiences that Agni element from the sun, that fire element from the sun. The air principle is lively in a plant when it first starts to respire, when the first true leaves are there. The space element, or akasha, when the plant is fully grown in space. The manas, during the flowering stage. Intellect, during the fruiting stage. That's buddhi. And the ego, when we have this new seed again. Now, this is how we're going to balance the eightfold nature in the plant. This is how we're going to bring total natural law into the plant. Remember, our definition of Vedic agriculture is agreeing with the culturing intelligence of total natural law. So we need to get total natural law into the physiology of the plant. We have to find out, well, what is total natural law? Well, Maharshi says total natural law is these eightfold qualities, plus Purusha and Paraprakriti, this ninth and the tenth. But we're dealing with the relative expression here, so we're dealing with the eightfold divided. So this is total natural law. Bhumi, Apo, Nalo, Vayu, earth, water, fire, air, akasha, like that. That's total natural law. We want to make sure that that's structured in the plant. So what we do is we apply Vedic recitations at the critical times in a plant's lifestyle, so we are sure that these values are enlivened. We want to make sure that the earth element is enlivened. We want to make sure that the water element is enlivened. When the water element is enlivened, the fluid systems of the plant will work properly. The plant will be strong, healthy, vital. When the metabolic systems in the plant are strong and healthy and vital, then the plant will be that way. So when those systems are first starting to function strongly, we want to apply that value of the fire element, the Agni element. So we're going to enliven successively throughout the plant's lifestyle these eightfold. And right here you can see the transition phase. It's not a distinct thing. I mean, the plant, the seed doesn't turn into a sprout like that. It happens naturally over time. But it is a transition from the time that it is a seed till the time that it becomes a sprout. And Maharshi even went into the details of what happens during this transition. It turns out that when anything changes to anything else, and this means anything in life, it goes through a transition sequence. It goes from diversity and collapses back down to unity and then reemerges as diversity. This has to happen. You know, we can't change from anything to anything else unless the first stage disappears and the second stage emerges. So Maharshi defined that, and he actually said that the eightfold nature is lively in this gap. So we know that when we have this sequence of convergence, and you know, many of you know the Sanskrit word prabhansabhava, when we're converging, then reaching that point of complete perfect silence at atyantabhava, and then the dynamism of that point, anyonyabhava, and then the reemergence into the new stage. So here again, the Vedic recitations will be enlivening these prakritis during this transition time. Here, if we do the recitations for Bhumi, this Bhumi element in the transition will become strong. When we're doing the recitations that enliven Apaha, then the up value of the transition will become strong. And by the time we've gone through all eight transitional phases of the life of a plant, we'll have enlivened all eight of these. Now, why is it that sound can affect form? Why is it that the Vedic recitations can affect the structure and function of a plant's physiology? That's a stretch for many people. There is a lot of research that shows the effect of music on the life of plants. So it's not that it's an undocumented phenomena. Plants do like music, and you can go and look up on the internet this effect. But of course, Vedic sounds are different, much more effective for affecting the plant. And by now we understand why. Because the Vedic sounds are the fundamental reverberations of consciousness, which are the fundamental reverberations of the unified field, which are the source of these eight structuring dynamics, which are really the dynamics that are structuring the physiology of the plant. So you see the cycle. We start with reverberations of consciousness, which are the recitations by the pundit. Those recitations enliven these values of the prakritis. These prakritis affect the systems within the physiology of a plant, and that structures the plant. Now, I have a really simple illustration of how sound affects form. And what this is it's a vibrating metal plate. It's a simple metal plate to which a quite unpleasant sound has been applied. And as they change the frequency of the sound, the sand, there's sand particles on top of the plate. You'll see the sand change based on the reverberation of the plate. And this will demonstrate that sound frequencies have an effect on form. And different sound frequencies have a different effect on different form. And this is the basis for what we say the Vedic sounds affect the physical structure of the plant. I hope this is going to play. It always played before. Okay, let me, I'll have to dig it out of the hard drive for a moment.
Inside every grain of sand.
Sorry, wrong one. Let's see. It is. Other than a reverberating plate and sand. Now watch what happens as they change the frequency. Can you turn it up a little bit?
the sudden transitions, too. So sound does affect form. No, I didn't notice that till now, but that's interesting. Okay, so that's why we can use Vedic sound to affect the structure of a plant. You know, we use Vedic sound all the time in our own mind for meditation. We use it in our yajna program to affect the environment and the world. We use it in the Vedic agriculture program. But now let's look at this food physiology relationship. Here's one of my favorite quotes from the Ramayana. Yad anaha purusho bhavati tad anastasya devata. It means that the food that we eat, our devatas eat. Now this is a very, very profound statement. Because it's not saying that our physiology, you know, consumes it. It's saying the intelligence, the devata, in our physiology. The intelligence in our physiology eats this food. Now, fundamentally to Vedic agriculture is that food is intelligence. You know, food is intelligence. Food is a certain, you know, we look at it on the superficial level. It's proteins, it's, you know, minerals, it's vitamins. These are all complex molecules, which represents, and any molecule, the DNA is the best example, but any molecule represents a sequence of intelligence. It's information. That's what it is. It's like code. It's computer code. We know we code certain things into software. It runs the computer. It's the same thing in the physiology. So it's really, when you break it down, it's the intelligence in the food which is affecting the intelligence of the physiology. So if the food is intelligent in total natural law, then those qualities of intelligence in our body will take that food up, take that intelligence up, and that will transform our physiology. That simple principle, balance the food. And you can balance the physiology. Balance the physiology, you create spontaneously higher states of consciousness. Again, a Hindi saying, mind depends upon the quality of food we eat.